I do my show on the Heritage Radio Network because I think it's important to talk about the impact of technology on our lives.
I do my show to reach home cooks and help them do better.
Because I love getting together with people in the industry.
I like hosting my show because, to me, it's the stories about people and their relationship to food that help make the food more interesting and more delicious.
Our hosts do their shows as a labor of love, but we still need your financial support in order to keep the lights on and keep the tape rolling. Please become a member today at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Sharp and Hot with Chef Emily.
Sharp and Hot with Chef Emily.
Hello and welcome. This is Sharp and Hot. You may notice that I am not Emily Peterson. I am Allison Hamlin, often contributor, often backseat rider, and always listener. And I'm really excited to be here. Emily is at the Fancy Food Show. And so while she is tasting delicacies from around the world, I will be keeping you company this Tuesday at 2. And I'm really excited to have Nikki Dinky here. She is the author of Meat on the Side, which is a very, well, we're going to get into that a little bit later. She is also stars in Junk Food Flip and is a Food Network contributor as well. So, anyway, what I wanted to do while we are here and missing Emily is give you a little bit of her backstory, because I've known Emily for a really long time. She was one of the first people that I had met in New York City. And when I met Emily, she was about 2 years out of her culinary program. She had gone to culinary school after a very intriguing, but ultimately pretty unsuccessful, unhappy stint at being an office worker. And she always kind of like told the story about how she was working in this windowless prison. Like, it was legitimately a prison that had been transformed into an office building on a college campus. And she realized that the thing that she always loved to do was to go home and cook. And she was really, that was the thing that brought her through her days. Her and her husband really found this shared love. And ultimately, she decided that that was the thing that drove her. And so instead of living a life where she felt like she was doing a thing to make a living, she thought making a life would be a much more sustainable proposition. And I think as a person who has watched her grow and learn, it has really paid off. And I think her leadership in that space has been really an inspiration personally for me, but I also hope, that some of you have gotten an opportunity to learn how that has shaped her philosophy. So, anyway, I've watched Emily kill lobsters, which was actually the first time I've ever seen anyone do this. And I think coming up on our discussion about Meat on the Side, I want to recognize the fact that as a recovering vegetarian myself, watching someone process their food and having someone walk you through what that is an amazingly potent experience. And for a lot of people, I think New Yorkers especially, we struggle with this disconnect with our food in a way that is not just going to a grocery store and picking things up, but I think it is more even a proposition of us not even seeing where that food is coming from. This is not news. No one is surprised that this is the way the world works, but watching the transformation of 12 people who walk in business casual and high heels and suits and jackets and then are handed chef knives and a bucket of lobsters and seeing the full spectrum of what that looks like. So, you know, that's everything from a man who is an emergency room surgeon taking charge. I've never seen a lobster be so surgically dismembered. probably was a one of the like one of the most amazing, but also a little like it was a little scary to watch because it was done in such a very, very clean way to a woman who really didn't even feel comfortable and spent some of her time, you know, spent some of the time actually outside of the room. And I think what I took away from that experience too is saying it's okay. I mean, it's okay to be wherever you're at in this experience, but coming to the table to learn more about how we can eat better and how we can learn about that process is a space that not only makes your dinner more interesting, but I think also creates space to learn about where people are coming from and what they want out of that dining experience. And you can really adjust that to be wherever you are at the moment. And so that is the world. And yes. And I think also something that Emily has always been really amazing about is putting out her sort of vulnerable side and watching as she has transitioned from this place into being a media person. And I think one of the things that I'd like to discuss as we move through this is how you can really feel able to share the things about your life through media in a way that feels constructive and meaningful to people, but is not necessarily going to expose you to the world stage and how that goes. So I think maybe we'll take a quick break now, and then we'll roll ourselves into a conversation with Nikki.
Out there, it's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. That was quite an apt segue into our next segment with guest Nikki Dinky, who is here to talk about her new book.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, and the smell of pizza is intoxicating.
It's wafting in.
Right?
I know. But the good news is that we can talk about something that is equally as delicious, which is your cookbook.
Yeah.
Which just came out, right?
Mm-hmm. June 7th.
Oh, my goodness.
So we are in the first month of Meat on the Side. Get it at a bookstore near you.
Oh, my goodness. well, how How did you come up with the concept for this book?
Well, you know, I really was just looking for a way to describe the way that I cooked and the way that I ate. I grew up a really, really picky eater. So I actually didn't eat a single vegetable or protein until I was 20 years old.
Are you serious?
Like, yeah, no, like though. 20, like old. You know, around the age of 9, 10, my mom got real fed up with me just giving her such a hard time that she said I could eat whatever I wanted, but she wasn't going to make it for me. You know, she had four other kids. So I cooked for myself, which I was happy to do, but that pretty much included, you know, carbs and cheese, and that was pretty much it. So it really wasn't until I was older that I realized this kind of had to change. Mm-hmm. And I kind of went on my own little culinary adventure and realized that you could actually learn to like things. You could learn to like those vegetables that you might hate. If you eat them enough times, you will develop a taste for them. And once I learned that, you know, I just kind of started slowly expanding my palate more and more. And I always loved food. I always loved the celebration of food and whatnot. But now I was loving more variety of food. And then I started cooking more. And, you know, when I really wanted to define the way that I cook, it wasn't that I was a vegetarian, but I did tend to eat more veggies. I always thought about the vegetables first and the meat second, because meat was not something that I ate until even later than that 20 years of age. And so I really just wanted to put a label on it. And what's so interesting about the concept of meat on the side, which is all about focusing on the vegetables, making them the entree portion of your plate, is that there's so many people that eat that way and that already are like, oh, that's the way that I eat. I eat vegetarian a couple times. I eat a little bit of meat. And so it's really an exciting kind of label to put on the way that a lot of people are eating and a lot of people really should be eating. And no matter what, it gives you just, you know, great ideas of fun things to do with veggies, like tasty, delicious things to do with veggies. No salads, you know, like good things, like mac and cheese things, you know?
I saw some meatball, eggplant meatballs, some kale cups. What else is in, what's in your book? What should we rifle through eagerly at the bookstore near us to
go
find?
You are going to find just really delicious ways to eat your vegetables in ways that, you know, you're not even going to think, gosh, that was a nutritious meal. You're just going to think that was delicious. So I do a lot of like eggplant meatballs, which have nothing but veggies in them. And, you know, that's how I want to eat my vegetables, in a meatball. I do cabbage grilled cheeses, spaghetti squash mac and cheeses. You know, I still love my cheese, so there's a lot of cheese in my life. I'll do a Brussels sprout and pear carbonara, you know, which I think is, you know, carbonara is a great dish, but I actually think that Brussels sprouts, that bitterness and that little sweetness from the pears make it even better. And I just love that at the end of my meals, even when I'm recipe testing, I love that I kind of sit at the end of my dinner and think, wow, that was like a really well-balanced, nutritious meal. But you're just eating a grilled cheese or like nachos with like fun cabbage on them. Like it's just a different way to think about your vegetables, and hopefully get you to eat them in new ways.
Do you feel like you had been maybe dissatisfied with some of the other alternatives that people were having to that lifestyle?
Well, I mean, you know, I think I always tend to, you know, veer towards the vegetarian option on a menu or something that's, you know, I just, because of the way that I started eating, I don't tend to, this is why I, you know, wrote the book Meat on the Side, but I don't tend to think about the meat first. I think about the vegetables first. And I will say that when I look at a lot of menus, it's like, you know, there's one like vegetarian option, or everything is structured in a way that's so pork, beef, fish. Mm-hmm. And I just think that we can think about that differently. Let's just think about the flavors that we want first and the textures and the vegetables that we want, and then maybe include some meat. So I definitely think that it's not out there as much as I would want it to be. And I think there's so many vegetables that are just underutilized. You know, like, why are we eating broccoli steamed, like, on the side of our plate? Like, it's so gross. Like, I don't want to eat my broccoli steamed with a little salt.
It
is sad. The texture's weird and, like, mushy, and it's just not, I don't like it. Like, I actually don't like it, but I do like my broccoli charred up with roasted garlic and mixed into like a taco, you know, or dipped in chipotle cheese sauce. There's my cheese again. I can't help it. But, you know, like, so I do think that we've thought about so many vegetables in one particular way, and that's just really not necessary. There's so many other things that something like that sad little broccoli can do.
Right. It's more like, it's not as a punishment, but a delight.
Exactly. You know, I was just writing something about like maybe how to get your kids to not be a picky eater like I was. And listen, I don't really know what I'm talking about. I have a 2.5-month-year-old. But my plan is to at least try to approach vegetables as not the negative food on your plate. You know, there's no reason that broccoli can't be as desirable as anything else.
Totally. I think that's an incredibly sensible way to consider your vegetables.
Yeah. I mean, this might not work at all. And my kid's going to like hate vegetables and my whole career is going to go down the drain. But this is my plan, people.
Well, it's good to have a plan this early on. I think you're really, I'm as not a mother, I have no idea what I'm talking about. So clearly don't take my word for it. But I have so much respect for anyone who is deciding to feed a child.
Yes. Well, you have to feed them. You got to feed them. You got to water them and you got to change them. That's what I've learned in 2.5 months. Yeah, I'll teach you more when you take that leap. Yeah,
I will give you a call and we'll talk about those things. But I'm glad to know there's someone forging ahead.
Yeah.
well, I think as also a fellow recovering vegetarian, I was vegetarian for 15 years and I went vegetarian when I was a teenager. You know, I was a teenager. And so much of that story is very familiar to me. Like when I moved to New York, I lived on bread and cabbage cheese for 2 years.
Yeah.
Exactly in the same way. And I wonder what you would say to those people who are kind of like living in that place. I know for myself, I was financially strapped, but I think also it was just a fear about where to begin and how to like transition into my life as an adult.
Yeah, like it's like we're still kids and you like are staring at that broccoli and you're like, I don't wanna. And like, and for me, you know, the reason that I was such a picky eater is that, you know, the taste of vegetables really disturbed me. You know, like it felt very hard to eat. Like I wanted to gag because of it. But I think the biggest lesson that we all need to realize is that as adults, like right now, today, if you hate carrots, you can literally go from hating it to loving it if you eat it enough times. Like you actually can develop a taste for it. And I think that we forget that, you know, we've done that a lot as a kid, but we can still do that as an adult. You just haven't had it enough. And yes, it might take you more times than someone else or more times than you want it to. But I think if you realize that, you know, you might make a little more effort, because here's the thing, a carrot's always going to be good for you. It's going to be good to try to get that into your meal. And I don't want you to just eat, you know, once again, like a raw carrot or steamed carrot or something gross like that. You know, I actually don't love carrots. It's probably why I brought up that example. So in my book, I actually char them up until they're literally like burned. And then I layer them on a sandwich with like a white bean spread and sprouts. And it's a totally different way for me to get carrots into my diet. And, you know, that's one way that you start to get used to that taste of it. You don't have to eat it raw. You just have to sort of slowly incorporate it. So I actually love it when someone says to me, like, I hate Brussels sprouts. And I'm like, I guarantee you, like, not just because I'm going to like fry them and put them with bacon. Like, listen, that's really good, but everyone's doing that. But, you know, I'm going to find ways for you to start to incorporate them in your diet. And I'm telling you, you will love them more and more. I think it's just really important to remind ourselves that, you know, just because we're adults doesn't mean that we still can't, you know, grow our palates.
Definitely. And I'm hearing from you a lot about technique, because it seems like the sad boil should be just outlawed, just right out.
It's so sad. It's like they're in this little hot tub and they're like, I'm drowning. And you're like, I don't care. And like, you know, it's sad for everyone involved.
So what do you look for? What do you reach to in a culinary technique to liven up your vegetables?
Well, you know, I think that the normal response that everyone's going to come in and say are things like, oh, I roast it. Like, yes, roasting is great. Roasting always brings out its sugars and can give you a smoky flavor, something different to that vegetable, whatever it is. You know, but I really do try to like sit down and think, okay, like here's celery. I always eat celery one way. Like I eat it raw and I dip it in like some hummus. How else can I eat celery? And so I actually have a celery and pear soup in the book that I remember I served to my family, and they were, you know, they're always excited to have me. I always cook up a big meal and they're like, what are you making, Nikki? And I'm like, I'm making celery and pear soup. And, you know, their reaction was not a positive one. They're like, oh, come on. Like, what about that carbonara you were talking about? You know, but once they had it, they're like, oh, this is delicious. And I think that that's my challenge. And that's something that I'm really trying to give to the people that follow me, you know, on my blog and buy my book and watch my TV show, is a totally different way to do it than you might think. So I really approach each dish and vegetable very different ways depending on what I'm doing. But I definitely challenge myself to think about more than just roasting. Do I want to puree it? Do I want to mix it with something else and puree it and create a totally different texture? You know, do I want to puree it and reform it and do something else with it? Like, there's just a lot of options.
Right.
So it varies, you know, vegetable to vegetable. But I do really try to challenge myself to, you know, every week come up with something new in the veggie world.
So I want to go back to sort of the beginning for you, because you are not you're not a traditional sort of culinary path. So I know that you had a YouTube series. What sort of the genesis of that, and how did you get into the professional food world and the world of food media?
You know, when I started, you know, eating more, I started cooking more, and it really just became this hobby. You know, it was like, this is fun. Like, I love to have people over and let's have parties and anywhere that I could kind of, you know, showcase or show off or whatever. You know, sometimes it was showing off, sometimes it wasn't, whatever new culinary thing that I had learned that week. And it was a hobby for a long time. I would say an extreme hobby, something I was very passionate about. And it got to a point where I realized that I wanted to share that. I wanted to kind of share it on a bigger, you know, platform. And there was definitely a big part of me that thought, you know, same way I didn't go to college. I didn't go to culinary school. Like, do I really have something to say? And I had a friend that kind of like slapped me and was like, you are ridiculous. Like, you know more than anyone I know. You have a unique perspective. Like, you absolutely have something to share. And so I started putting some videos out there on YouTube. I come from an acting background, so it was kind of a natural thing for me to think about combining hosting and acting with my food. And I knew I didn't want to open a restaurant. I had done that life a lot in my past. I ran a bar for a decade. And the service industry is tough, so I really just kind of wanted to share my food in a little bit of a different way. And listen, you know, the series didn't like take off. It was a very slow climb. But because of that, you know, people started taking me seriously. And then I got a radio show. And then because of that, people started taking me more seriously. And then I got my blog up. And then because of all those things, you know, Food Network, you know, finally, because I had been to them in the past, said to me, you know, like, all right, we're going to like let you on this show, Food Network Star. And that was a great opportunity for me to, on a national stage, you know, showcase what I can do under really ridiculous circumstances, but, you know, to a degree, showcase what I can do. And then it's just, you know, kind of grown and grown and grown since then. So it's an exciting thing. And I think that the lesson is that, you know, listen, like, culinary school is great and you learn amazing things. But like, you know, if you just love food and you love cooking, just keep cooking. Like, the best way to teach yourself how to do something is to do it wrong 5 times, you know, and then you are not going to forget how to do it right. So it's been a long journey, but an exciting one. And I feel like it's kind of amazing to be 33 years old. I know. Don't freak out. I'm 33.
She looks amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, to be 33 though, and feel like I finally kind of found the right creative path for me, because I think that I went down a lot of different creative paths, photography and acting and all these different things. And I feel like food and the other things that I'm doing with food have really given me the career that I always wanted and had no idea, especially when I was young, because I didn't even like food. So it's a pretty big transition.
I wish Emily was here. I'm sure that she's listening to this out there and just nodding her head so vehemently. And because I know that that is happening, I have to ask, what kept you sort of going along this path? Because obviously, you know, there comes fits and starts where you look and you see, like, I'm investing all this time in making this blog or this video mm-hmm. series, or I'm showing up every Tuesday at 2, which yeah. is so funny. We were just saying Nikki's radio show is at 2.
Used to be, yeah, it still is, but used to be I used to go Tuesdays at 2.
Right? So it's a very comfortable spot for you.
Mm-hmm.
But what kind of helped you decide that this was where you really wanted to commit your energy, and what kept you going when you felt like, you know, you were at that point to decide whether or not you wanted to take the next step?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had been pursuing some sort of creative arts since I was 18, really since I was 15. I used to come to New York. And before I got on Food Network Star, I believe it was like 6 years of just putting content out there and recipes and just doing it without that many people like looking at it. And I think for me, you know, I've always been one to put in the hard work, and that's fine. And I think what was exciting for me about the food space and, you know, having food be my creative outlet is that I enjoyed the process of it, you know, and that I actually liked doing the work, not just the payoff of the work. And so, yeah, it took a long time, but like I enjoyed testing out that recipe or putting those videos up there or interviewing people about different, you know, food stories on the radio. And so I think that, you know, it's a really important lesson. Like, you just got to find something that makes you happy because there's only so many payoffs. There's only so many books that come out or shows that premiere. Those are amazing days. But there's a whole lot of days in between. And so in everything you do in life, it is about finding what just day to day makes you feel like, huh, I had a good day. And for me, you know, food makes me feel like I had a good day.
Definitely. You do so much across the board. I mean, really, I feel like the portfolio of your work is really astounding.
Thank you, gosh.
Well, I mean, it's so true. And you put out new recipes every week on your blog.
Yeah.
And then you're filming for seasons sort of at a time.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to balance that life with, you know, your life and recently being a new mom? How do you find balance in a job that's not just a 9 to 5 and you show up and you do your work and then you go home?
Yeah, I mean, it's not 9 to 5. And I definitely, like, I remember the other day I was writing recipes in a dark room holding my daughter's pacifier in her mouth, like in her bassinet, and like literally trying to use my phone just to get enough light to like write down like my thoughts. You have to be passionate enough that you want to do it at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that lately I've had to try to learn to let go a little bit. I don't have to cut every vegetable or, you know, type up every word. I can still be very involved, have it be my thoughts, my recipes, my ideas, and still let people help me. And so I've slowly found some people to help me with my blog, to help me put up things or help me to edit my recipes and catch my mistakes or help me test out things. And that's hard. It's hard to let go of anything. You know, I just was recipe testing yesterday and I had to leave for a little bit and she, you know, cut the eggplant, you know, slightly differently than I had in my head. And, you know, I realized I didn't exactly tell her. It's so silly, you know, instead of long planks, she did rounds. It's really not a big deal. But I had to kind of sit there and be like, it's okay, stop it. It's fine. Like, it's okay. So it's not exactly what you had in your head. It's still going to taste great. And it's great that you got to test this out today. Well, I was also taking care of my 2.5-month-old and like doing a million other things. So yeah, I think it's about, you know, how do you keep on expanding without losing your voice and losing touch with everything that you do? And I think that's important, people, and finding the things that you can let go of, but not letting go too much. Because I think there are people out there that, you know, get a little too big and suddenly, you know, people are just writing their books for them and whatever. I had someone come up to me and they said, oh, I looked at your book and I was looking for your co-author. And they're like, there's no co-author. And I'm like, there's no co-author. Like, that's every recipe is mine. I tested it all myself. Every word is mine. Like, this is, you know, this is my food. This is my craft. And so, yeah, I think that it's finding those places to kind of give and pull. And, you know, it's hard. And I, you know, the more she naps, the more I get done. And I have priorities and I just think about what needs to get done today. And I'll just keep figuring it out because it's going to keep changing. And I used to put a lot of pressure on myself to figure out 10 steps down the line how I was going to shoot my new season and do this and do this. And like the bottom line is you will figure it out and you will at some point maybe just have things take priorities over other things. But I try not to lose too much focus of what I'm really doing, my food, my voice, and the message that I'm putting out there.
Well, it sounds like you need to be pretty organized to make this happen.
Oh my God, I love my lists. Oh my God, you know what? I wish I had her name on the top of my head, but there's someone who just gave me, she wrote a book on lists. And I was like, you're amazing. I'm reading your book. And I'm like, she has a whole book on lists. It's like amazing things. This is what gets me excited these days. It's like a book about how to write lists. Because if I have myself organized, I feel better. And I feel like I can, like, you know, be more creative and let go of things. Otherwise, it's just like you feel like the world's hanging over your head.
Do you think that's a kitchen thing also? Like making lists, checking recipes?
Sure. I mean, you know, I never really worked in a restaurant kitchen. I just ran an overall restaurant and bar. So, you know, I don't have that experience with being so super organized like that. But
I think
I always,
you mean anal retentive.
Anal retentive. But I am at the same time. But it's funny because, you know, I actually have had to put in place more structure when I am recipe testing and doing all these things, because it used to be so like willy-nilly, you know, because I started off as just something fun to do. And I always had a glass of wine in my hand and I, you know, just kind of made whatever felt good. And I never wrote any of it down. So it's funny because it is in me, but I've had to kind of pull it out. I'm sure I would do well in a restaurant, but you know, I prefer to stick to my Manhattan kitchen and, you know, have that be my little restaurant space.
Have you had to outfit your kitchen differently now that you're professional recipe testing?
You know, you'd think, wouldn't you? Like, you'd think that I would have more than like four pots, like literally like pots and pans, and like I have four. I make it work, and it's kind of crazy because I do have people that help me out, and we are photographing the recipes as we go and, like, you know, doing all these different things. But it is a real standard Manhattan kitchen, and it's just about what do you really need. And listen, I want a dehydrator like nobody's business, but like I just don't have space for it. So I use my oven on super low and like heat up my apartment all day. But yeah, no, it's really a very standard kitchen. But it's almost good because I am speaking to that home chef. And so someone told me once that they read a restaurant chef's book and the recipe simply didn't work, you know, because their burner for the amount of pot and the water just wasn't like strong enough. It didn't work. And the great thing about it is that I am coming to you from a very small kitchen. I probably guarantee you smaller than yours. And yet all these recipes work and they're easy. And I'm always thinking about how to simplify. So really the great thing is that, you know, they're really accessible in that way.
That's, I think as a New York cook, I always wonder, like I think about Ina Garten all the time, where I in my mind, I have beautiful Hamptons.
Oh, yeah.
Kitchen.
And I have my garden. Well, actually, I do have a garden.
Oh, you do.
I'm very lucky. I have a 20 by 25 foot terrace. So amazingly, in the middle of Manhattan, I actually do have a garden, but it's not quite like Ina's with like these giant thyme bushes. And
we can all dream, right? Yeah. Do you grow anything out in your garden?
I grow over 80 plants. So I have probably somewhere around like 10 tomato plants, probably about 20 peppers. I do a couple eggplant, and then I do some fun things like I've got some fennel growing, a couple of radishes, cucumbers, which don't always work because I don't have enough bees to pollinate cucumbers or zucchinis. So I have to like do it myself and literally like catch it when the flowers open and then like kind of make them do it. So, you know, it's
bee yenta.
Yeah, I have to be the bee. But it is really cool to, of course, just have that outdoor space. But, you know, from a culinary perspective, to walk outside and pull a tomato off the vine and kind of a little bit about what you were saying before. Part of what you're saying is this appreciation of the lobster. And maybe especially coming as a vegetarian, really like looking at your food and understanding where it comes from and all these things. And I think that it has really made me to the next level try to be really, you know, as low waste as possible, because I pick that tomato, you know, off the vine and it's like I use every last little seed. But then sometimes I buy a tomato from the store and I'm like, eh, it's bad, and throw it away. And I think that we all just kind of forget how hard it is to grow a tomato. And you know, it's a great reminder. And of course, it tastes delicious. So like you definitely want to come to my house come summertime, like high summer when everything's in bloom or not bloom in ripe. You know, I don't know. You get it. There's food. There's food
time
on my terrace in Manhattan. Come on over.
That sounds amazing. And I think we're almost out of time, but I want to wrap back around a little bit to that idea of meat and how you kind of encourage your readers to look for meat, or if there's any tips that you have for our listeners about what to think about when you're really composing these recipes and trying to be mindful of all of those ingredients.
Yeah, well, I think we need to, number one, just realize that we're only supposed to have 5 to 6 ounces of meat every day. So my recipes never have more than 4 ounces of meat, and most of the time it's more around like 1 or 2 ounces. So I think you got to kind of, once again, just kind of rethink how we've been maybe thinking about how we make dinner or what that plate looks like. But I think that, you know, there's a couple like great ways to do meat on the side meals. Really easy. Think about it like in something. Think about a taco or a pizza or something that combines things. Pasta. These are really great, simple ways to kind of let a little bit of meat stretch, you know, because if you have a pasta and you start it off with a little bit of bacon and you use some of that bacon fat and whatnot, then you add in all your vegetables and suddenly you've got a meat on the side meal that's not feeling vegetarian-esque. So I think that if you're trying to rethink how you're eating, try not to compartmentalize your plate and think, here's my protein, here's my veggies, here's my this. Think about something that, you know, puts it all together. You know, make a taco that's heavy on the, you know, toppings and a little bit less on the meat, and there you go. You've kind of adapted into that meat on the side philosophy in a really easy way.
Wow. Well, I have to put a shameless plug in for Heritage Foods USA, who are our sponsor during the break, and they sell heritage breed meats. But one of the founders, Patrick Martins, has this philosophy: is meat is a condiment.
Yeah,
and I think that is so resonant in your work. As we wrap up, where can people find you on the web, maybe on their TVs?
Yes,
and your book again.
Gosh, I'm just everywhere.
You're everywhere.
You're
going to
be so
prolific.
Sick of me so soon. So I release new meat on the side recipes every Monday on my website, nickidinkycooking.com. And of course, there's a lot of recipes there and other things to look at. And then my book is officially out, Meat on the Side, which you can find anywhere, which is super exciting. Like walking in a bookstore and seeing your book. That's cool. And then I also have a show on Cooking Channel called Junk Food Flip, in which I also kind of use this philosophy in order to flip restaurants, really indulgent dishes, and see if not only can I make it healthier along with my co-host Bobby Dean, but can we make it better than the original? So it's a really fun show called Junk Food Flip on Cooking Channel that's also totally worth checking out.
Oh, wow. Well, prolific, wonderful.
Oh my God. Prolific. That is quite a word.
Yeah,
thank you.
Delicious. I can't wait to check those out. Thank you so much, Nikki, for coming out today. I really appreciate it. And I also want to let you guys know that Sharp and Hot is produced by Heritage Radio Network, which is a nonprofit member supported radio station devoted to all things food. So if you like this or any of our other shows, feel free to go online in the top right hand corner of our website. There's a little beating heart and you can become a member and support our work. It definitely keeps the lights on. And I believe you can get a sweet new koozie for your summer terrace drinking experiences. So definitely check that out. And I will be back again with you next week. Emily is taking another day out of Bushwick, but we'll be back next week with some summer entertaining tips and we'll see you then.
With Chef Family.
Sharp and Hot with Chef Family.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.